Hey Zedheads, welcome to the podcast. I'm Jason.
And I'm Lucy.
And I'm Peter.
Peter, and this is the Walking Dead cast episode 473.
And this episode, we're covering Kingdom, Ashen of the North, the prequel to the Korean zombie series Kingdom.
Yeah, so we're gonna, like, we took a couple years between the first two seasons, but we figured, hey, it's just a little movie, why not just knock it all out? And
it feels good to absolutely
just cover the whole thing. Welcome back to the podcast, Peter. Glad you wanted to come back and cover this.
Well, thank you very much for having me, and I'm flattered that you were kind enough to have me back. I'm looking forward to talking about this.
Oh yeah, me too. I'm looking forward to it. It's always fun when you're on. And I did want to, before we start getting into Kingdom, I know that you guys, well, Karen and David went over to England, and you guys had, what, lunch or dinner together?
We had dinner. Yay! It was so nice, wasn't it, P?
First time you've ever met.
Yeah. Yeah, it was weird. And I feel really bad because the first thing I said to Karen was, you're shorter than I thought you'd be, which I hate because people say it to me sometimes and I'm like, oh, fuck off. But she was absolutely lovely. And it was so nice to meet David as well. And yeah, we just had a really chill kind of pub dinner in a very sort of typical York establishment. And no, it was good. Peter was on the whiskey recommendations, so some whiskey was had.
That's amazing. Are they whiskey fans? I don't even know.
They seem to be. Karen seemed to be. But cool. No, it was lovely. It was really wonderful to meet Karen in person, and made me all the more excited for coming out to San Francisco in hopefully November. Who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah, I think it's probably going to be November. We'll find out real soon. I'm sure of it. I was really happy that you guys got together and you sent out a picture and it was lovely and I knew you guys would love each other.
Yeah, it felt like meeting a very old friend, which is nice. That's one of the nice things about podcasting. And in a couple of weeks, I'm in Ireland for work, so I'll be meeting Derek in person as well. So that's really nice. So I'm looking forward to that.
He's great too. All right, let's get on with it. We're going to talk about Kingdom, Ashen of the North. This is a prequel movie to the series Kingdom that we've covered the first two seasons of. And that series is like a kind of a period piece, political thriller, zombie horror all mashed together, set in 16th century Joseon, which was the last dynastic kingdom in what's modern day Korea. It's available on Netflix. The movie came out about a year ago, almost exactly a year ago, and that was a little over a year after the second season. So you'd think they'd be getting ready to put out a third season, but I can't find any word on a third season. We don't even know for sure if it's happening. It seems like it. There's more story, clearly.
Mm-hmm. I hope so.
Yeah. I hope so too. So before we get into like spoilery details, let's just say whether we would recommend that people stop listening and go watch that if they haven't seen it or not. What do you think, Peter? What about you?
Oh yeah, no, I absolutely. Aside from anything else, presumably at this point you've seen the end of season two, you've seen that big cliffhanger and you're sitting going, what's that all about? And at a minimum, you want to know what the kind of payoff to all of that is. And I think it's quite a satisfying payoff. It feels very much like a setup for a season three, which again takes us back to that point that we really want to know if and when that's happening.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What about you, Lucy?
I think so. I didn't love it the first time we watched it because I got a bit confused by the politics of it and was like, hang on, who's where, what? So that tends to make me not pay attention so well. But the second time, once I'd kind of got my head around it a little bit, it made a lot more sense to me. And there was a little bit the first time we watched it of like, have we seen this person before? Who is that person? So once we kind of got a handle on who we were seeing and how it fit into the bigger thing, I really enjoyed it the second time and would recommend it to other people for sure.
Yeah, it's tough because this is another culture from ours. It's in another language, and I found myself at time going, "Wait, why is this happening? Did I miss something?" Because I'm really struggling to keep up with what's happening. And it turns out there are times in this movie where you're actually not supposed to know why something's happening, and then there's a revelation later. But when you're like trying to struggle to make sure you're actually grokking it, you kind of, for me, I felt dumb. Like, I think I must have missed something because I'm totally confused right now.
Yes, same. I was like, what? What's happening? Huh?
Yeah. But then once you, watch the whole thing and think about it, I'm pretty sure I've worked out everything. But yeah, that can be a little bit challenging. And also for me personally, I would say if you like revenge movies, you should definitely watch this. If, yeah, like Peter said, you just really want to get caught up with the story of Kingdom, definitely watch it. It wasn't my favorite. I liked it, but I didn't like it as much as season one or two of the series. It was still beautifully staged and shot. It was a bit slow too. Halfway through, I was like, "Where's the zombies? Come on!" So, but then by the time it was over, I felt pretty satisfied. So that's not like a glowing recommendation, but if you like revenge movies, or if you just want to be caught up with Kingdom, or if you're at all a little bit curious, I would definitely say go watch it.
Yeah, I mean, it's 1 hour and 6 minutes before the first zombie. So you are waiting a long time. If you
Yeah,
come for the
unless you
zombies,
count tigers and deer.
yeah, unless you count animals. And I have to say, when I was watching it, I must have had Karen on the brain because I was like, I don't know if Karen would enjoy this because there's a
I
lot of
know.
animal gore and butchery that even I found quite difficult to watch.
Yeah. I personally love that. I love it. I just would watch a whole movie of just butchery, so it was fine with me. I was
That's not the kind of thing you want to publish on the
Yeah, I was
internet.
gonna say, you maybe want to cut
Hey, I'm just
that.
no, I fully own it. I'm fine with it.
Okay,
No.
cool. Cool. I
So.
hope Jenny is listening so she knows what to get you for your next birthday.
No, I mean, to be serious about that, I mean, we're watching. I don't feel the same way as most people, where it's like it bothers me more to see an animal hurt than a person. I value people as much as animals, so for me it's just all the same. It's like, okay, we're watching a horror movie. People are gonna get mangled. Animals get mangled. It's all the same to me. So that's how I
I
feel
think
about
that's fair. That's fair. It gave me some big Tywin Lannister vibes when we first meet someone kind of gutting and skinning an animal. Although the person who's gutting and skinning the animal in this case is actually quite nice, so slightly different vibes.
Well, that's another thing too. I mean, I think, I'm not a vegetarian, and I know that the food I eat comes from somewhere, and it's kind of got to get that way somehow, and that's kind of how it happens.
Yep, I'm a big stinky hypocrite in that sense. Peter is much more, I would say, hardy about that than me. He can get an amazing amount of meat off of a carcass. It is incredible. Whereas I'm like one bite and then I'm like, oh my God, there's nothing left. I don't know what to do. So I would definitely die first in a cannibal situation.
You'd eat the prime cuts, and then I'd be eating the offal. We'd be fine.
Yeah, we'd be fine. We'd be
Yeah,
fine.
you complement each other well. All right, let's get into our points, Peter.
Okay, right. Well, I suppose I need to get this in first before anyone else does. The really shocking thing for me watching this, having watched Kingdom Seasons 1 and 2, was that there was violence upon hats in this sort of TV movie or sort of long episode. There's a sequence where Minchi Rock is sitting there telling the local villain, the governor, that he knows what he's been up to, and the guy slices off the cord on his hat.
Oh.
And I thought, this is setting the tone. This is all bets are off in Kingdom.
That's going too far, man.
Not even the hats are safe here. But
you know it's serious.
It did take me down a really interesting rabbit hole. And it's very relevant to what you were talking about there about butchery of animals. Because something the both of you will remember, and anyone who's listening to this and has already watched it will know, is that Tahab, Ashen, the protagonist's father, is a butcher. And he's looked down upon by the local nobility. He spat at one point. And this is actually reasonably historically accurate. The butchers, there was something like a caste system in Joseon Korea at this point. And people who worked with animals in roles like butchers were seen as the kind of the lowest class in working society. And so this theme that we'll maybe hear more about in this episode, of how this is a very disenfranchised group that most of our protagonists are part of, is actually spelled out in the role that Tahab has. He's a sort of untouchable kind of figure. The relevance of all of this to hats is that this group were not allowed to wear the gat. And the gat was that really interesting looking kind of conical, transparent hat that we saw a lot of the characters wear in the main series, which is called a gat. And my central thesis here is that what we're dealing with now is the gats and the gat knots.
You've been sitting on that one.
I have. I thought, I can't tell Lucy this. She'll steal my one thing to say here.
Yes, I will. Yeah, that's true though, huh? Hat violence. Yeah. The dude that did the hat violence, the hat murderer, that's the Queen's brother. That's what's his face? Yeah. Hang on, Cho Byom Il.
Yeah.
So we get more background as to why he's such a shit.
Yeah, because I looked it up because I'd forgotten, and he was killed by Chang in season one, episode two, way back. I think there's been some flashbacks with him, but he hasn't been around in a while.
Yeah, he really hasn't.
But it's a prequel. You brought up hats, and that made me realize, wow, I didn't even think about hats once until just now, which really says something, because they didn't really have the majestic hats, did they? Or did I just kind of miss them?
No, they barely did.
Yeah. And, no wonder we didn't like it.
I always think about hats a bit. But yeah, this is... It did take me down this rabbit hole, and it's not a coincidence. Because so many of these characters, this kind of Jurchen group, the Ashen, the protagonist, is from, are really the bottom of society. So they don't get these accessories, and to some extent they are not even entitled to have them, and that's why you're not seeing these hats. You know, the main show was heavily dominated by the nobility and the wealthiest and the most powerful people, and this is the opposite end of that scale.
Yeah.
These are people who are sort of barely accepted
and they really drive home the whole gats and gat not idea when the snobby woman with her daughter tells her not to look at the animal because that's for the lowborn to look at animal blood and guts, and then she throws a paltry piece of meat on the freaking dirt for the butcher, and he's still really happy about it, and hey, everybody, we get to eat. And then they of course superimpose that with the scene at the end where all of those people as zombies are eating this Joseon soldier. It was not subtle, but still kind of cool, I thought.
I hadn't appreciated really on the first watch as well how much that like not belonging is a part of what Ashen is feeling towards them about her father. You know, he spent his whole life serving them.
Yeah.
But they never recognized him officially. They never gave him a seat in government. And that refusal to kind of accept it, that refusal to kind of give him any recognition is a real heartbreaker for her. And rightly so, because it sucks. Like, it's not fair.
I mean, yeah, by the end of this, because, I mean, we're kind of getting into it, but she's critical of her father for continuing to think that there's any chance that he'll because, well, just in case the listeners are at all confused, these Jurchen people are outside the main kingdom and they're a threat. Mm-hmm. But the ones that live inside the kingdom are Ashen's people, and they're shunned by their own people and also the kingdom of Joseon, which is modern day Korea, because they're inside the kingdom, but they're considered other. And so mm-hmm. they're kind of shunned. They're not given a seat in government or anything. And so her father tells her that their ancestors, the Joseons, did sort of give them this piece of land and told them they didn't need to pay taxes and help them. So he's showing them loyalty in hopes that they will give him a seat at the table. But she says, well, they've since taken away all of that and they're not helping you. And so she's critical and tells him you should stop being loyal to them. And it's just like, yeah, she's just like, they don't love us. Nobody loves us. And she ends up hating everyone by the end of it. You can't count on anyone. Yeah. No one's there for her.
And it ties in really nicely to the themes of the main show, I think, that point, because I'm quite convinced, maybe it's just because it's called Kingdom, the so much of the show is driven by this question of what do the kings and what do the nobility owe to their subjects. And I think it's interesting to look at that fact that a previous king bequeathed this piece of land to, you know, Ashen's tribe or Ashen's group. And so, you know, there was something that deserved loyalty there. And I think where we're getting to is a point where the government of this kingdom has kind of fallen to this low standard where they're not performing their duty to their citizens. And that's what leads to this crisis.
You're right, because even with Chang in the first couple of seasons, he sees his duty as helping the people, and the queen and everyone else, they just kind of detest the people and consider them below them. And so, yeah, that's part of it. But also, it's in particular with this movie, I feel like the question is, who do you actually consider your people? Because they don't even consider Tahab, Ashen's father, as worthy of having any seat at the table. And to me, it's all like, it just really hits on something that I think of a lot in my own life and in our society, where if people decide that other people are different enough from them, then they just they vilify them and either want nothing to do with them, or at the extreme want to destroy them. And I hate that. You know, I feel like if we lose the ability to sort of try to find common ground between people that are different than us and engage with them, then this is what you get. You get war and death and zombie plague.
You do. You absolutely do. Yeah. And yeah, the idea of like people who are not speaking for the people they're supposed to represent is like quite resonant, I think, for politics all over the world at the moment, where decisions are getting made left, right, and center that don't actually benefit the people who actually have to live with it. And that's really damning, I think, and something that Kingdom captures quite well.
And it also touches on how do you deal with the people within your group that may have different views, and which ones do you cater to or not, but also outside, you know, how do countries deal with each other and help each other or not, and depending on how different the culture is, maybe they get less help than the ones that are similar, and all those kinds of issues.
Definitely.
So, I mean, watching this, that's probably another reason why I wasn't so enamored with it, because it's a big revenge thing. And basically she decides that everyone is the enemy. She just wants to kill everyone, and I can't say I blame her based on what she's been through, but it's just not a nice place to spend time. You know, I don't like those kind of movies. Like, I don't like the John Wick movies where you're just going around killing everyone and they're glorifying it. This movie, I feel like, doesn't really necessarily glorify it. Maybe it flirts with it, but also I think we're meant to see her as a dark figure by the end, a tragic figure. But still, it's like, ugh, so dark.
Well, one of my kind of points was that I felt very strongly that I was Team Ashen, but this was not a popular decision in the house. Like, we had a little bit of a disagreement about this.
Interesting. Okay.
Let's stop and remember that we're hearing from noted Negan apologist Lucy Hindman.
Oh, piss off.
That's worth noting, yes. No, what's your point? What? I want to hear you expound upon that.
Me? I just... Because she's had an absolutely crap time. No wonder she wants to kill them all. Like, at no point did she get a break. We did not get to see her be happy. Like, it's like a shit sandwich, only it's all shit. Absolutely. Like, she...
That's what I wrote. She got she repeatedly got the shit end of the stick through her whole life.
I was trying to figure out the moment where she goes properly evil. And I think the minute where, like, she is gone is when she kills her dad. Like, I think that's the moment where she's like, all bets are off, I'm completely gone. But before that, she's getting, you know, trigger warning for sexual assault, but she's getting repeatedly raped by men in the village. You know, she's getting repeatedly assaulted. And we see marks on her face. We see one man in particular coming in and out of her pigsty. She has to live in a pigsty. And then once we reach this point of... Hang on, even before that, actually, you know, her mum is... critically ill, she's having to live with that. She comes back, finds all of her family have been slaughtered, goes to ask for kind of safe sanctuary and mercy from the people whose fault it is, even though she doesn't know that yet.
Yeah.
So, you know, fast forward again to the point where she's killed her dad. She then realizes that all of this was completely futile and pointless because it was caused by the people who she thought owed that, you know, who she thought were looking out for her and for her family. And they weren't.
Yeah. And if people don't understand, so the whole plot is all these Jurchens were found dead in this area where it's a forbidden land, and the Joseons wanted to do damage control and not, like, take the blame for that because it would just provoke war from the Jurchens. And it turns out it was the Heiwan Cho clan, the Lord Cho's brother. And they said they did it because they were taking their wild ginseng, which the Min Chi Rock said, that's not even yours anyway. But anyway, I guess the Heiwan Cho clan is so allied with the Joseons that they didn't want the Jurchens to know that they did it. So they blamed Ashen's village, this little shunned village. Like, let's just put all the heat on them. And then the Jurchens came and decimated the village. And so that's why it happened. They were framed.
And as the film is kind of picking up pace, the reveals start coming quickly. She sees an arrow that indicates that the bodies she saw at the start were killed by the clan. And we see that there's something else that she figures out that becomes apparent, I think. Or maybe that's just the total... Huh, yeah.
She busts into the records office.
That's right. The very well-archived Library of Treachery. She pops in and has a read of that, and it's like, yeah, everyone's the worst.
Who we're framing.
Yeah. I was like, oh, that wasn't smart. And yeah, it's just an absolute bummer. No wonder she wants to kill everyone. I sort of don't blame her. Like, I mean, I don't know. I think Peter thinks is a bit more... I don't know, you're a bit more like, if you want to kill everyone, that's probably not a good thing. And I'm like, well...
I think if your plan is, I will wipe out this whole country with my army of the dead, you're probably the villain. No guarantees. But
it felt like we were watching the birth of Darth Vader. But I mean, she definitely... I agree with both of you. She has reason to want to do this. And... probably the best thing for her to do is to not do it for her own psychological health. But I know how it feels. We all know how it feels when someone did you wrong flat out. I have this one person I think of a lot, and I never actually took revenge or anything. Yeah. I'm about to. No, I'm just kidding. it's not you. You're off the podcast. No, just kidding.
You're off the podcast. God damn it.
Just kidding. No, I don't necessarily blame her. I guess the only way that I can sort of blame her is, you know, some people that she's killing probably are just sort of innocent swept up, you know, conscripted into the army, forced to follow orders. Now they're being eaten by zombies because she's mad.
Right. I think something that really interested me about this whole thing is how Min Chi Rock, the head of the Royal Commandery Division from the main series, who seems very much like a well set up, clearly defined hero in the main series, is very fundamentally changed. I think by this.
Yeah, that's true.
And it's maybe relevant to that point you're making, Jason, about, you know, a lot of perfectly innocent people are killed, and I suspect that's right. But we're also caused to reconsider some of the people we think are innocent, and reassess them as at best a lot more ambiguous.
I mean, Min Chi Rock seemed like a hero. He was the one who was investigating the deaths of all these pregnant women in season two, but now he's framed this village, consigned all these innocent people to death, and he's doing it because he's loyal to Joseon. Did both of those things. He just wants to protect the Joseon kingdom from any threats and does not consider Ashen's people part of that, but it's no excuse. It's horrible.
Yeah.
And I think it's that, some people sort of talk about, you know, Thanos was right in relation to the Marvel. And it feels a bit like that, is that I agree, the Lucy, the Ashen actually has more than sufficient reason, or more than sufficient justification is maybe a better way of putting it, for the revenge that she takes. It's at least initially entirely proportionate to, you know, the awfulness of what's happened to her. But I think from a Darth Vader point of view, she then keeps going and has no intention of ever stopping.
Well, she hasn't even gotten, I think, the guy that she should most want revenge on, which is Min Chi Rock, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
yeah, well, she won't, because we know how his story ends, I guess.
Did he die?
Does he die? Oh, no, maybe he doesn't die in season two, huh?
I think he's still alive.
So if there's a season three,
ooh,
you would think. But at the end of season two, we see Lord Chang going up north to investigate the origins of the resurrection plant, maybe, or something. Anyway, he's there and he sees her, and she's got all these zombies chained up. And, I mean, she has said she wants to kill everyone, I think. So that would include him, presumably, right? Why wouldn't it?
Yeah. Well, she's addressing someone at one point in a voiceover of, like, you the one I want revenge on the most. And I assume that's him.
You mean Min Chi Rock?
Yeah.
But I'm saying Chang, the good guy from season two, is the one that finds her at the end. So
yeah, he finds her at the end.
I think she probably won't just know that he's the good guy.
No, that is true. That is very true. And we'll think the other one of the things I really liked about this that kind of links in is the twists and the nuances to it. And I think that, of course, a really big kind of book throwing one. I say book throwing because there's a point in the Game of Thrones books where I threw my book because I was so shocked by the reveal that something was actually someone else's fault. Is that Ashen is the one who got the plant down to the kingdom of season one. Mm-hmm. So it's because of her. We see her speak to the physician. So the whole mess is put into place because she gives the physician advice to do this to the king. I just thought that was very cool. Not morally, but just in terms of how the story has unfolded and it ties everything together.
Yeah, I mean, it really changes it, because this is a revenge film, and there are a lot of revenge films like Kill Bill, and this game I played, Last of Us Part 2, is a revenge game, and it's very, you explore the morality of it, so that's why I like it. It doesn't necessarily glorify it, it's more about exploring the morality of it. But anyway, it's interesting because she, you know, gets the shit end of the stick for probably 70% of the movie, and then she starts training for her revenge, and then she enacts her revenge, or she starts to anyway, and it's so cold to watch, especially when she's locked everybody in, she's turned some of them into zombies, watching them eat each other, and starts picking them off from the roof with her arrows, with this look on her face, like, right, see what happens? Mm-hmm. And that was dark, and I mean, there's a part of me that's going, oh my god, this is so cool, and then there's another part going, god, why do I have to watch this? But that was just the start of her revenge. And we find out pretty much that because, yeah, she told this doctor guy about the resurrection plant, it led to all the events that we've seen in season one and two. I mean, I think she did that because she wanted to spread the zombie plague as much as possible. And that's what happened. And so now we kind of can recontextualize the events of season one and two as like her, this woman's revenge quest expanded in a huge way.
Yep. See, I like that a lot. I think that I like that kind of, it works for me. I just, yeah, I think that's cool. I like figuring out why these things happen.
Yeah. And I think it's, you know, there were a couple of things, Jason, at the start that you mentioned that in some ways this felt a bit different from the main series. And I think what I'd probably say is it feels, it's not quite as of such a barnstorming action kind of experience as the main show is at its best. And I think it is a lot more subdued, but I wonder if part of that is probably just getting us to that point where we have a really interesting antagonist. I think if this is a setup for season three, as it seems like it's meant to be, then it's all the richer for having an antagonist that the Lucys amongst us can root for.
I call it like I see it. What can I say?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it would be kind of a shame not to have a season three after this. Well, shall we try to get back to the format a little bit? Would you say...
Sounds good.
It would be your turn, Lucy, but...
Oh, okay. I'll just keep going. Go ahead. I'll just keep going. Keep going. What have I got here? I generally like the darker mood. I know that Kingdom itself is quite dark, but I thought this in particular was... There were no moments of levity in this film at all. Like, there were no laughs. Like, it was very dark. And from the beginning, it was. And I liked the way that it played with them... silence, so we don't actually hear anyone speak for about the first 10 minutes of the film. It's all done through, like, you know, the relatively good CGI deer. I know we've spoken a lot on the podcast about why CGI deer are always shit. Whoever's doing the deer for Kingdom clearly has a better budget.
They should hire Walking Dead should hire the CGI deer person from Kingdom.
Literally, at least be a step up. Yeah, I know. I mean, god damn it, that deer still pisses me off all these years on. Anyway, it's silent.
Might as well have just
like
drawn Bambi in there Disney style.
They could have just had like Michonne holding up a freaking drawing of a deer and it would have been more convincing. Like her going like, oh hi, I'm a deer. Like I'd have been like, sure. Yeah.
She's like ventriloquism. I'm a deer.
Yeah. And Rick's like, wow, this deer is really making me think about my mortality. Anywhere, Deer versus Tiger was a cool way to start it. But yeah, I liked the way that it played with silence. It held back on the zombies for a long time. Like, there was a lot about it that I thought was really cool on a second watching. On a first watching, I was a bit like, oh, what's happening? I don't really understand. Is this going to be just politics? Like, is this like the Silmarillion of Kingdom? Sorry, everyone who really likes the Silmarillion, including Peter, who I know has actually read it. But yeah, I did worry that that was gonna be it. But I think it all came together. So that kind of darkness and silent moments, I think, paid off in the end.
Yeah, like these historical stories maybe tend to work best when there's a lot of politics and things as the backdrop, but the drama is with the characters. And when the drama becomes more the politics, I guess, then it just maybe feels like you're reading a textbook or something.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, I'm really curious to know from the two of you, so for the listeners, fairly early on there's a sequence in which a zombie deer and a tiger fight. And I'm really interested to know from the two of you, who were you rooting for?
That's a good question.
It's a really good question.
I was thinking maybe the deer, this doesn't quite answer your question, but I was thinking the deer was going to, like, in one last sort of attempt to get himself out of this, at least, like, bite the tiger on the ear or something. But I don't think it really needed to happen. The tiger just needed to eat the deer to contract the virus. I guess I thought there was no point in rooting for the deer because clearly the tiger was going to win. That still doesn't really answer the question, but I didn't want to.
Yeah, I mean, I'm like a cat person, so the tiger, but also I get upset when animals are like fighting and like one of them is helpless and is all like ree, ree. Like that made me sad. So I was kind of rooting for the deer, but I feel like the deer got its revenge. Yeah, I was like, well, why can't we all just be zombie friends? But that was clearly not on the cards, so whatever.
It was interesting because, well, there was this really great sequence where the deer eats the resurrection plant, and then it's kind of making some weird noises, but then it's quiet and you see the sky through the trees, like the camera's looking up at the sky, until you realize that no, the camera's actually looking down on a pool of water, and the deer starts thrashing around and upsetting the water. It was just very artfully done, as the show often does things like that. And so then the deer's walking around like a zombie deer, and that was fucking cool, and it was all skeezy
looking.
That was
really cool.
And I thought, okay, this deer's about to go on a killing spree. So then I was kind of surprised that it didn't last long. It didn't really do anything, you know? It was just sort of a mechanism for this tiger to become a zombie. That was a surprise. And I was a little disappointed we didn't get to see the deer, like, do some damage.
Nature has a way. Peter, do I even need to ask who you were rooting for?
You know me, Lucy. It was the tiger through and through. But I did find when I was watching that zombie deer kind of rev up its engine to go and attack this tiger, I was like, you go, deer. You can do this.
You got this.
But there's a really nice moment just in the deer's final moments where it seems to be getting ready to bite the tiger, and just the way that Jason described, and you see this huge paw come down onto its face and push it away. And I think what they might be doing there is just setting up that this tiger is a big deal, that this is a really powerful animal, which is important to some of the sequences that follow.
Yeah.
I mean, that's for anyone that's not persuaded that tigers are a big deal.
Yeah, I know. Right, it's like, exactly. Oh, not like a regular tiger.
No problem. Now, since we're talking about the tiger and the deer, I was a bit confused about something. So I guess, another thing where Ashen got the shit end of the stick is her mother's dying. And I think you did mention that, actually. But anyway, I think that's why she went into this forbidden area to get the wild ginseng to help her mom. And that's when she found this secret cave that happens to have all the instructions for using the resurrection plant with illustrations and everything. And it showed the deer eating the plant and then the tiger attacking the deer. And so I thought, okay, well, then the tiger and the deer stuff must have been a flashback. And now we're seeing that people chronicled that event. They somehow knew about it. But then the tiger is relevant to the story. So I'm like, wait, well, so did that happen twice? And I think the answer is that it was a flashback and we did see it chronicled, and the tiger was just undead for many years and roaming that forest / jungle. And maybe that's why it was off limits.
Oh, what do you guys that's a really, think? I really like that theory. I went in a completely different direction, but I actually prefer your interpretation of it.
What was your tiger fan fiction?
it is, isn't it?
Yeah,
it just is. The way I kind of rationalized it for myself was, I thought, yeah, it does seem kind of a bit specific, the situation. But I thought to myself, well, actually, it's not absurd to imagine that maybe the only animal in this region that eats that plant is a deer. You know, that's not unusual that there will be particular plants are eaten by particular animals.
Yeah. Tigers don't like plants. They like deer.
Yeah, exactly. So, the deer's predator is a tiger. The only thing that eats this plant is the deer. There's your tiny circle of undead life there.
Yeah. But, yeah. Maybe the same scenario plays out every couple of weeks or something or more.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's hard because they do set up that nobody's allowed to go into this region. It seems like every idiot in this region is going in there anyway.
Yeah,
but they're not supposed to.
Get the ginseng.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I did wonder something that I was trying to work out is it's very clear that it's Ashen that gives the plant to the physician that sets off the events in Kingdom Season 1.
Mm-hmm.
But we also know that the plant's used at least once before then. During the Japanese invasion that comes a few years before Kingdom.
Oh, shoot, yeah.
Now, one of my tiger fanfiction theories was that somebody in this kingdom already knows about these plants, knows that they're an issue, and that's how they were able to be used during the Japanese invasion. But I can't decide. I wasn't totally satisfied about the explanation there.
I think the Japanese have invaded more than once. That's what I thought.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, they...
And so the Japanese invasion where they used the zombies came after this movie. You know, because at the end of the movie, she tells the doctor about the resurrection plant, and then he goes on to use it with Lord Cho and Lord Anne to fend off the Japanese attack.
Oh, okay, so he uses it then and with the king.
Well, then the king comes even later, yeah.
Yeah, so that could work.
Yeah, that could be.
I think that's the order of events. So Japan has been attacking over and over, and then Ashen discovers the plant and the instructions on how to use it. She passes it on to Dr. Lee, whatever, and he then uses it to fend off another Japanese attack. And then after that, because then it's 3 years later when the king is sick, and they use the plant, the doctor knows about the plant, so uses it to bring it back to life. And then I forget the sequence of events, but it somehow goes out into the wild and starts the plague.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Like, but this movie was sort of billed as the origin of showing the origin of the resurrection plant, but really it just kind of showed how it got into the events of season one and two. But
yeah,
it had clearly already been around, been known about, been used, even been documented in some time before that, because whoever drew those drawings or carvings or whatever they were knew all about it. And then here's another question. So my memory of the first two seasons is fading fast, but she was able to resurrect people who had already died by injecting it into their foreheads. And I thought before we'd only seen people who were alive either ingest the plant or get bitten, and that's, or eat somebody who was infected, and that's how they would turn. Is that correct? Or did we also see them, from you guys' memories, resurrect people who had already died that way that we saw in this movie?
Well, I may be reading too much into this, but something that's in the credit sequence for every episode of Kingdom is this sort of elaborate funeral process that's used on what's clearly the king. This is the credits for every episode. And you see conspicuous use of acupuncture needles and things like that.
Yeah.
And we're never, I don't think in the main show we're ever told in detail how the king is resurrected. But we are told in this that Ashen tells the doctor to use acupuncture needles with the plant on the king, or whoever he likes to resurrect someone.
Okay. Yeah.
So
that's what I read it as. I think it's, I mean, the one plot hole for me is, how did Ashen know that she would need to tie up the people that she resurrected? Did she try it on one? And then, like, it's, they're all, they're clearly restrained and things like that. I'm assuming she didn't resurrect them all at once, otherwise she would be dead. She doesn't seem to have any kind of special connection with them that means that she doesn't get bitten. So I was kind of curious as to, like, did she tie them up just in case?
Well,
like, you know.
I mean, we don't see that she's resurrected her village until after the scene where she sees them use the zombies to take revenge on the Joseon soldiers, so we don't know if she did that already or after, but I get the feeling she knows what's going to happen. I mean, the text on the wall said you can use this to resurrect the dead, but there will be a cost, and she seems to know a lot more than just that, because she knows about the needles and everything, so and it's part of her plan to take revenge, so I think she knows that they're just going to become these monsters.
I think she did do it at the very start, because their bodies would have decomposed if she hadn't. And also, Peter pointed out when we watched, that explains why she was hunting, because we sort of don't question why she's hunting. We're just like, oh, okay. She's hunting.
Okay,
that's fine. It must be to do with her thing.
Well, I thought she was training for revenge, but yeah, also just to get food for them. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think she must have done it quite early on, but yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot.
I love that scene in the end where she's seeing them all laughing, but it's clearly like a dream. Reminded me of an episode of Yellow Jackets.
I loved that. That whole sequence was brilliant. It was so well done. It's just the sudden.
She's cray cray. She's a bit cray cray.
Oh, she's bonkers. Yeah, she's absolutely bonkers. Like, she's lost it. She has lost the plot conclusively. Hashtag Team Ashen. Yeah.
Maybe this is like a spectrum of how much you can sort of really just enjoy that place that she's in. Because I'm more disturbed by it than I enjoy it, but I do feel like there's a part of me that's like, yeah, get that revenge, girl, you know?
Yeah, why not?
I don't know. It's disturbing.
Very much.
Okay, let me do one. I'll talk about, I was going to do a whole thing about what happened in the plot, but I think we've more or less covered that, I feel like. If anybody's still confused, write to me and I'll do it in another
we'll
podcast.
We'll do cave drawings.
But it's still beautiful like the rest of the series has been. I like the change of scenery. It's more foresty, jungly, with more lush and green and earthy. It's like Star Wars. We're on a jungle planet now.
Yeah, and mountains. Cool. Mountains, Gandalf. There's mountains. Yeah.
And, there was one scene early when she first goes into the cave and she has her torch and she's looking at the painting of the deer eating the resurrection plant. There's this foreboding kind of ethereal music and then this, like, low, I think, throat singing comes in. It sounds a bit like a didgeridoo, but I think it's, like, throat singing. And I'm just going to play a little bit of it right now. I love that kind of thing.
Oh, so cool. Brains.
And then the whole scene I mentioned already about when the deer first turns is beautiful. I also liked that it was 9 minutes in before anyone speaks. And I tend to like scenes with no dialogue because it usually means there's something interesting going on. So that worked well.
And there was something a bit Shakespearean. It's the two like village merchants are talking at the start and you see them talking again at the end. Like there's all this like darkness and apocalyptically horrible stuff is happening, but these two guys are just like, oh, did you hear about this thing? No. Oh my god, I bet it's that thing. Oh, never mind. And then at the end you see them again, like, oh, looks like we're doing this now. And I didn't really catch that the first time around, but I was like, oh, that's cool.
Rosencrantz and Guildenstern.
Yeah.
And then even just like, this is really dark, but the pile of broken, naked, speared gherkin bodies was so gruesome. But
oh, that was great.
They captured an aesthetic there, too. They're kind of green. And the way they're arranged, all kind of, like, artfully, I guess, it's really dark. But we saw similar in Game of Thrones when the White Walkers would arrange dead bodies in spirals, you know?
It was very, there's an episode of Hannibal, I think, that did a similar, I mean, lots of Hannibal had a lot of dead bodies in it. But, yeah, it was a very kind of artistic set up.
Yeah.
I actually want to ask about this because this was kind of my plot hole here was as a setup for building up the tension, all these bodies kind of arranged and sort of naked in the forest with sticks around them is really scary and really intense. But as it turns out, for some reason, the Heiwa and Cho just stripped them after they killed them.
I know.
Yeah, why are we all naked?
Yeah, I mean, in what way was that implying that a tiger did it?
Yeah, the tiger ate their clothes. What? No, he didn't.
Tiger's a perv.
The tiger's a perv.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I mean, they were killed by Arrow, and then they were mauled by the tiger, but you'd think there'd at least be some, like, shreds of clothing somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good point. Wasn't there also, Peter, did we not have a discussion yesterday about, like, one of them was missing? Because remember he says, are you sure it was 15? And then we were like, oh, where's the other dude? And then did he turn up?
You were right about this. one of the ways that Ashton ultimately realizes who is responsible is she sees a body in the woods with an arrow with a very distinctive fletching in its back.
And that's the one that they didn't catch. That's the one that they weren't able to cover up.
Mm. Yeah, they missed it.
Right, one. Okay. Yeah, we got there. We got there.
Because I kind of thought that was also, I don't know exactly how, but this is Minchi Rock questioning Cho Byom Il, right? And I thought the number of bodies was somehow how he realized that Cho Byom Il was guilty.
They made a big deal of it. Something for sure. Like that. Yeah.
And then going back to sort of aesthetics, that was a lot of the stuff I liked. The tiger scene, not the early scene, but later when they went on this hunting expedition, which that confused me a little bit too. Why are you hunting for this tiger when you're the one who knows that it wasn't the tiger that did it? But I think the point of that was Minchi Rock wanted the Jurchens to come along and see, look, there's a tiger. And then so they would buy that the tiger did it. And then when they cut the tiger open, and it was kind of funny. He's like, this tiger's been already was dead. And he's all, more importantly, there's no human parts in here, so we know the tiger didn't do it. And I'm like, yeah, but the thing about it already having been dead seems like a big deal too. But anyway, mm-hmm. But yeah. So then when he didn't buy that, then he said, okay, well, actually it was Ash, you know, I don't know the name of the clan, but Ashen's clan that did it. So he framed them for it. But my point about all this is during that hunt, there's some scenes where the tiger is killing some of the hunters and they're going through this field of reeds. And there's a lot of scenes where you just see the person screaming, but you can't see the tiger. And mm-hmm. I didn't know for sure if that was them saving money on their CG budget or they were trying to save it for the reveal. Because when they did show the tiger, even though it did look a bit CG, it was pretty like mangy and deranged looking and pretty disturbing, even more disturbing than it would be if it was just a regular tiger. So I don't know. What did you guys think of all of that? Did it come off well, or was it not as good as you wished it was?
I'm happy to go first. Cause I had this on my list. One of the things that I've talked about before that I really like about the main series of Kingdom is they love coming up with an interesting set piece sequence. And they really held back in this. They were definitely in there, but this sequence with the Joseon soldiers and the Pajiwi and the tiger all hunting each other through this field is the only really complex set piece action sequence, in my opinion, that's really like that. I think it took me a couple of watches, I have to admit, to really get my head around what the different motives are. And I agree with your reading of all of that, Jason. I think you're right. But the first time around, I was watching it thinking, okay, why are the Pajiwi, this is the tribe of Jurchen from the north, mm-hmm. why are they here? Why are they participating in this hunt? But of course, they're participating in the hunt because they want to see, okay, is this tiger all bullshit or is this a real thing?
Mm-hmm. And Minchi Rock wants them to see that it's a real thing, which means that he knows there is actually a tiger, I think.
And I think maybe he just knows there's tigers around here.
Yeah.
I think if I want to try and patch a plot hole here a little bit, they were never going to find human remains in any tiger because as far as Minchi Rock's concerned, there's no man-eating tigers around here. But he has that little piece of crafting, that little box from Tahab, Ashen's dad, with him. So it might not have been plan A the whole time, but I think it was always part of his plan to probably frame Ashen's tribe.
Me too.
I think he was ready to do that from day one, and it might have been the plan was either they fall for the tiger thing or, you know what, when that whole flimsy story falls apart,
yeah.
Here's my better plan. I think that's how it all plays out.
Yeah, and that's why he sent Tahab up there to tell everyone that a tiger killed these people, because then it would make more sense when he framed Tahab that Tahab was trying to cover his own tracks when he did that. So he was just setting him up from the whole start. I think you're right.
Yeah,
covering all his bases.
It's funny because I think it's kind of Kingdom's strength and weakness as a storytelling medium. in there all at once is it is when it's good, it's very, very satisfying that they cram a lot of intricacy into quite simple plots. You know, there are quite a lot of moving pieces, but if they don't spell that out, sometimes you can miss things. And I actually found it really rewarding to do a second watching of this because more came out. But yeah, it was hard to get my head around all of that when I was watching it at first.
Yeah,
I think it's maybe not one to watch cold. Like, you might want to have watched it just after season two. I think we maybe like we took a watch to be like, huh, who's that? Mm-hmm. What? Thankfully, it's not long, so it was easy to kind of do a second watch. But yeah, I found the tiger sequence quite cool. I like a lot of the big shots in Kingdom, so like ones that are done with drones or like wide sweeping shots, and I thought they did some cool stuff with the cornfield. But it did seem like they were being very sparing with the zombie tiger for a reveal that was more creepy than horrifying. But the power of seeing that tiger take people down was very cool.
Cool. Okay. Yeah, maybe that's what they were going for too. Maybe they had more CGI budget, but they wanted to have that reveal.
Maybe they spent it all on the deer. I mean, it was worth it.
But for me, the most impactful scene was the whole zombie scene with Ashen on the roof. That was where I was brilliant. The most floored and disturbed.
Mm-hmm. But it was absolutely
quite affecting.
Just no mercy at all. Like, absolutely none. And, you know, why should she? We had a bit of a debate over who the guy that she takes to her village is. I thought it was the guy that had assaulted her repeatedly.
Yeah.
But it also looked like she stabbed him dead at the start of that sequence. So I'm a little bit confused about that. Maybe he wasn't dead from the stabbing. Maybe he was just very badly injured.
It seemed like the guy that she fed to the village was the one that assaulted her. I thought that too, but I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Once again, Team Ashen.
Yeah, I can't blame her for that at all. No way. All right, so much fun.
I know, it's a real laugh a minute.
I do like it more now that we've talked about it, though. We're not done necessarily. Do you guys have any more points?
I just to slip in at the end, because I thought I've got a really receptive audience for this year. I'd like to give an honorable mention to Fear the Walking Dead here.
Oh, piss off. Yes. What are you talking about?
So good.
So ready yourselves, brave podcasters.
Peter, we need to talk after this. Okay, we need to have a talk.
an hour and 6 minutes into this, you see your first human zombie come out and attack a couple of guards in the military base, and it's a big deal. It's not a horde zombie. It's just one zombie, but it's a really big deal. It's really hard for them to deal with because they've got no idea what they're handling. And it makes all zombies inherently more threatening because this one zombie is a challenge. It's not just a sort of disposable horde. And it reminded me of that first promising pilot episode of Fear the Walking Dead, where, again, they have a really hard time dealing with one zombie. And it totally changes the balance and the feel of a zombie show to see it from that other perspective. And I just liked that. I thought that was nice.
Yeah. Are you thinking of like Nick in the drug den and stuff?
And there's a scene in a storm drain. I'm pretty sure it is.
Ew. Yes. Yeah. I think I remember that. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Fair. You can talk about Fear when it was good. Those are the rules.
Yeah. Those are great. Those are some of my favorite moments on Fear.
Remember Nick? He was great.
We were just talking about the darkness of it, and you mentioned that the whole series is dark, but I feel like a big difference is in seasons 1 and 2, you had Lord Chang as this guy who's holding on to hope that he can take power and then be this benevolent king. And, you know, in this movie, it's more just like this poor woman has been raked over the coals and now she's going to kill the people who did it, you know? And you feel bad for her and you understand why she would want to do that. But do I want to spend my time in that place? I don't know. Yeah. It was okay for this movie. I did. And there's like I've kind of said there's a part of me that understands that and can even get into it. Like, yeah, it's just a fantasy. So yeah, get your revenge. But personally, I wouldn't want to, if we did a podcast just on revenge movies, I wouldn't last long.
No, fair, fair.
Yeah.
Very fair. I found a couple of notes. Another piece of evidence for her having risen the village from the dead early is you hear two people in the military village talking, and they're talking about her as this like disgusting little person from the Jurchens, and they say, I hear she buried all the bodies herself, which I think is our indication that she was, you know, doing stuff with the bodies and resurrecting them off screen, because no one was going to help her do it. I found the stuff with her dad absolutely horrifying, like when she finds him in that camp. And the first time round, I totally missed that they'd like dismembered him. I was just like, oh, he didn't seem that happy. And Peter's like, they removed his arms and legs, and I was like, what? So you had to go back and watch it again, and I was like, holy crap, that's dark.
Yeah, because I did too. I was like, why did she ended up getting him out, so why did she kill him? But
Yeah. I was a bit like, oh boy, Peter's like, are you watching this? I'm like, yeah. I mean, yeah.
He's the very closest thing I think you get to a hero.
He's a nice guy.
I think he's the only morally unambiguous character.
He's the Ned Stark, and look where it gets him.
Yeah, he's the Ned Stark. I wondered what happened to the mom. Did I miss something?
She must have just been killed when they got the village.
But it was weird that they didn't even like they didn't even show it, or I don't know. I guess we just assume.
Yeah. And also I think the dad's also a reveal, because you assume he's been killed in the village, but we had a bit of a discussion about, did he come back? Did he not come back? His beads were there, but was he there? So that reveal was kind of horrifying.
Mm-hmm.
I think you make a good point about the mum there, Jason. It felt like there was more story, and I almost wonder if some more was edited out at some point that they didn't have the opportunity to develop the mum, because she was definitely there for Ashen as a child to come back and say, look, there's this plant that helps with dead people, can we use it? But they didn't stick with it. They didn't really need that for the events that played out.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was more... Yeah, you're right. That was sort of the impetus for her to discover the plant. But it's her mom, so you should at least show a little something, like maybe her wondering or something.
That scene where baby Ashen, or like little Ashen, is crying by the bodies really got me. That was really sad. I felt very bad for her.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God. And then, when she found her father, too.
Oh, awful. Awful. I did enjoy the magical aging boar that chases her, and then suddenly it's like 10 years in the future or something, and she's like, I'm grown up now. I'm like, oh, that's cool that they've just passed over. How much time do you think passed, Jason? Because we couldn't decide.
I would say not too long, probably like 6-7 years.
Yeah, that's kind of what we thought, I think.
That feels right. It's because we see some characters during the child Ashen sequence who don't look older or significantly older.
Yeah. I'd say she's around 12 as a kid, maybe, and probably around 18, 19 as an older person.
I think that chimes for me. And my last note is, at the end we see her kind of facing off this tribe from over the border who are the ones who like brutalized her dad, and that the leader of that tribe, who does get a name and I've completely neglected to write it down, has a falcon as his badass companion, which is pretty cool. But I do wonder if we'll see how that scene ends, because surely they outnumber her. Why have they stopped? Why haven't they just run her over? But it's a cool visual.
It was weird to me. They're like, because that's another one that she should want to take revenge on, considering they killed all of her people, and they're facing off. She pulls her bow and they're just like, oh, look, she's pulling out her bow and arrow. That's weird.
Yeah.
She's aiming at us. Oh, she fired.
Huh. That's strange.
Right. I mean, they weren't like running or pulling their own weapons out or anything.
Yeah. If only we could have moved quicker in a different direction. Oh, well, guess we're all dead now.
But we know she survives.
Oh, boy. Yeah, exactly. So that's, yeah, we rewatched. So after we finished rewatching the film yesterday, we went and watched the last 5-6 minutes of Kingdom Season 2, and it feels like Ashin's gone more off the rails. You know, it's played much more as, like, I don't know, like the Saw dungeon or something. Right. Like, there's bits everywhere.
But I could see it going there, based on especially that scene where she fed the guy to her friends.
100%. So I'm definitely hoping for a season 3. But yeah, that's kind of the end of my notes. I think Peter might have more than me.
Peter?
No, I think notes would probably be exceeding it a little bit. An honorable mention for the sequence in which Ashin is slowly drilling her way through a tree with her bow and arrow. I thought that was a lovely way of kind of visualizing her determination in the passage of time.
Right.
She eventually shoots an arrow through the trunk of a tree, just by gradually
getting
building
stronger,
it up. I like
more
that.
Skilled, more determined, yeah.
Oh,
more
shoot.
Persistent.
I didn't even notice that. That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Just chipped away at it. I thought that's a nice little visual metaphor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. I feel like we've all changed from this, and
yes.
We will never be as innocent after having watched this.
Yep, we know what to get Jason for his birthday. Videos of people butchering animals.
just remember, Jason, you stick to your guns. When that's reported in the press, it will be Area Man collects these videos, refuses to apologize. And it's that last part. That last part you want to be known for.
I have a beautiful gray Siberian fluffy kitty that I love every day. He loves me the most, and he jumps right on my chest whenever I lay on the couch and I pet him.
You can still do, FYI. I don't know. I mean, you know, you can still like watching animals being butchered, just saying.
If any animal like would enjoy it. Those videos, it would be a cat.
Oh, cats would love it. Right. They'd be like, yes, yeah. Yes, this is exactly what I want to watch.
Like, you like him, and you like me and not him, right?
Yeah.
we got only one piece of feedback, so I'm just going to go ahead and play it now. It's from Greg, which I'm glad that he called in. So here we go.
Hello, Walking Deadcast. This is Greg. Well, yay. That was intense. I did not know what to expect with this movie, but I thought it was absolutely amazing in plot, action, and cinematography. I really enjoyed seeing the caste system again, even if it was like designed to make me feel empathy for the lowborn and disgust for the highborn. I felt it was emotionally manipulating, but I mean, I could live with that. I mean, it accomplished what it wanted to. I really liked the training and the growing montage. Although seeing what I can only assume was like violent rape and sexual assault happening behind closed doors made me a little bit less sad when everything kind of went to shit later. The actress who played Ashin was absolutely phenomenal at expressing like frustration, sadness, anger, and then just the deadness of her eyes made me understand just how lost she was. I thought it was great.
Both actresses were good.
One thing I wasn't sure about was when she was first threatened by the guy who came in. He brought up that she had killed a Joseon soldier and she couldn't live there or whatever, basically threatening to rat her out, I guess. Did we see that? And I just didn't catch it. I really am curious. Throughout all of this, like, I could feel for her every step of the way. And it was crazy how much havoc one person could wreak on all, like, the towns and cities. I really like the twist that she was the one who ended up teaching Physician Lee, who then, you know, taught Cao Bi and then and resurrected the king. And they're like kicking off the events of the series. I thought that was cool. Revenge against an entire country, or I guess two countries, is kind of a lofty goal. But I guess for someone with literally nothing else to lose and having suffered such horrendous losses, like, I don't condemn her for her actions. I mean, it sucks, but... and then having zombies at your disposal kind of helps out a bit. Did all the zombies that she made have to like hide during the daylight during season one? Or did she like kill all of them after she wiped out that town? I was a little bit confused. And then like the fact that she as a child, like she resurrected effectively every townsperson she came across after they were just massacred and then kept them like in a barn. To care for them, like, definitely gave me, like, Herschel vibes. Yeah. I mean, if, I guess if they happen to get loose, well, I mean, I guess who cares? They'll just start the plague sooner, I guess. It seemed like the only person who crossed over to the show was the head point guy that she was in contact with, and her father hired to go, basically that stabbed her father in the back. I feel like that was the same guy who ended up being one of the investigators in the actual show later on.
Yes.
Maybe it's not the right same actor. Maybe he just looks similar.
Same.
But anyway,
same guy.
Look forward to hearing the coverage. And I thought this was like a great closeout or prequel to the series. All right. Talk to you later. Bye.
Awesome. Thanks, Greg. Glad you called
Yay,
in.
Yay, Greg.
Glad he mentioned the acting because we didn't, but he's right.
Yeah, no, she was great. She was dead good. She's really good. Well done. She was, though. She was really very, very good. Yeah. Especially, yes. Props to the kid actor as well, because that's, you know, it's not an easy thing to convincingly sell absolute devastation as a child. So, yeah, well done.
Yeah. There was something he said he didn't catch, but I didn't catch what he said. Did either of you?
Oh, yes. He commented about... shortly after we see adult Ashen living in the military camp, a soldier comes and finds her in the pigsty that she's being forced to live in. She holds him at knife point and threatens to kill him, and he says, if you kill a Joseon soldier, you'll have nothing. And that's what tells us that she's now in a position where she's going to be sexually assaulted for the rest of her adult life. And I think what Greg was getting at was it was a little ambiguous whether he was threatening to blackmail her with the fact that she had previously killed a Joseon soldier, or whether he was saying to her, if you kill a Joseon soldier now, then you'll be an outlaw. And I read it the opposite way. It was, you have no power here. You could kill me, but then you're on your own, and you'll presumably be executed. So you have no way of fighting back, so you have to do what I tell you, which puts her in the position where she can be, you know, raped by duress, in effect.
Yeah, I wonder if it seems like they're like, you know, people are saying that we're not as mean as Game of Thrones, so we got to step up our game.
Yeah.
I mean, this really did it, right? This movie was...
Yep. Yep, it went there.
It was dark, or darker than anything on Game of Thrones. All right, cool. Thank you, guys. We'll take a little break. There's a little bit more to come. Stay with us. Little grave I'm grieving, I will mend you. Sweet revenge I'm dreaming, I will end you. I've been here since dawn of time. Countless
obvious threat to untold numbers of citizens.
The people it kills get up and kill.
Are they slow moving, Chief?
Yeah, they're dead. They're all messed up.
This is a Walking Dead cast news update.
Okay, the premiere date for the Walking Dead Season 11C trailer has been announced.
Oh! You had me!
And, it's going to be at Comic-Con during their presentation in Hall H on Friday, July 22nd, which is coming up pretty quick here. And I, if they don't reveal at that point when the final season will air, I will eat my hat. I'm sure they will.
They must, right?
Okay. Fingers crossed. We're poised with our flight bookings. We're just like, come on.
Yeah, we got to know. As soon as they do that, and I really hope they also mention whether or not they're going to show the finale a week early on AMC Plus, and I hope they don't, because we all want to watch it at the
really
same time.
I really hope they don't.
Yeah, yeah. Then I will try to book that theater, and we can plan when we're going to have our get together
as
quickly
amazing.
As possible. My family, we planned this vacation to Hawaii, which I just got back from, and another vacation to Europe in a week or a couple weeks here, and I really do not want to go. And I tried to get out of it, but the It's not because I don't like Europe. I mean, I love going to England. It's because I've taken too much time off. I need to be like, August has Game of Thrones. I mean, House of the Dragon, Lord of the Rings.
Oh, coming shit.
Up.
Is that up already?
I've got Better Call Saul starting right now. I'm trying to want to plan this Walking Dead get together. I'm just fucking stressed out about this trip. And also, after having spent 2 weeks on vacation with the kids fighting the whole time, we had a good time, but they're ready to stay home too. It's too much. I don't need a month, a year. You know what I mean? I'm really, really not wanting to go on the trip. I want to go next year. I love Europe. I want to go, just not right now, but I have to go. So I'm like, oh, and I have to do like 4 or 5 podcasts while we're there for over 2 weeks. You know, it's going to be fucking miserable. And so anyway, I'm going to be in my hotel room the whole time. I'm not going to be seeing Europe. I'm going to be in my hotel room working. So, and trying to figure out what to do with the kids. So,
yeah.
It's,
yeah.
I know it's a high, it seems like a first world problem, but I wish if anybody knows a way to get out of a non-refundable plane ticket, let me know. Anyway, I'm just bringing that COVID? Up because like, when, yeah, I, how do I get, I mean, I have to actually contract it. I don't know. You need a doctor's note to get it's a refund. So, my point.
It's fine, Jason. We've all seen Taken. We know what happens the moment you land in Europe. Yeah. That problem is going to solve itself.
I guess I'm bringing this up because I really do want to hit the ground running when this announcement's made, but I'm going to, I don't know. Am I going to be able to do much planning? I hope so. So we'll see.
Just you don't stress about it. We'll figure it out. I have the internet too. We'll work something out. Okay, we'll work something out. It'll be fine.
It'll work out. It'll be fine. Sure. But I am stressed. I need to change my attitude pretty quick here because it's coming up fast.
Turn that frown upside down.
I think I have long COVID. I've just been really exhausted lately, and this is the last thing I want to do is go on yet another trip.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You've had a lot, and you have had it a couple times, so it would make sense that it's maybe long.
Okay, well, anyway, about Comic-Con, the panel is going to be hosted by Chris Hardwick, of course. It's going to have a shitload of people. Gimple, Angela Kang, Greg Nicotero, Norman Reedus, Melissa McBride, Christian Serratos. I mean, basically everyone. Ross Marquand, Kari Payton, Seth Gilliam, Josh McDermott, Michael James Shaw, Kaylee Fleming, and Lauren Ridloff.
Nice.
So it should be cool. And the regarding the final 8 episodes, AMC says, quote, "In the upcoming final episodes of The Walking Dead, threats lurk around every corner, dead and alive, as each group continues to get caught in uncontrollable situations. The looming pressure is cresting towards a day of reckoning for all. Will the sum of their individual journeys accumulate into one or divide them forever?" I say,
well, I mean,
accumulate.
I say accumulate, except for Daryl, who's got a spinoff. Right.
Will Daryl and Negan die? No.
No, absolutely bloody not. Of course they won't. Don't be stupid.
End quote. There's also a panel for Tales of the Walking Dead, which could be interesting, depending.
Oh, yeah.
And then another item we really liked. Well, I think you liked Jordan Peele's first two horror movies, Get Out and Us, right?
We did, yes.
I did. And he has a new one coming out in a couple of weeks called Nope.
Yep.
Because that's what you say when a normal person says when they see anything from a horror movie. They say nope and mm-hmm. they go the other way. So it stars Daniel Kaluuya and also Steven Yeun.
Yay.
And so Lucy and I and Karen are going to be covering it on the Walking Dead cast in our next episode.
Yay.
Yay.
I think actually... We'll need to work on dates for that because I think it's getting a later release here, but we'll figure it out.
Okay, yeah, we'll figure it out.
We will figure it out.
I mean, we have to do it before I go to Europe. So. I mean, I hope we can. Oh, God.
Yeah.
All right. So, and then the synopsis for that says after, I hope you guys don't mind me reading the synopsis. It's going to take about 15 seconds to listen.
I was going to say 15 minutes. I was like, sure, yeah.
No, I just don't want to spoil anybody who likes to stay completely spoiler free, but I'm going to start reading it now. Mm-hmm. And if you don't like it, just skip ahead a little bit. So it says, after random objects falling from the sky result in the death of their father, ranch-owning siblings OJ and Emerald Haywood attempt to capture video evidence of an unidentified flying object with the help of tech salesman Angel Torres and documentarian Antlers Holst. I guess it doesn't say much, but there's UFOs.
Mm.
Did you see the trailer?
We did. Actually, we went to see... we've been doing a lot of going to the cinema lately. We saw Thor. Was there a trailer when we went to see Thor?
There was.
Yeah, there was, wasn't there? Yeah.
I think we'd seen a teaser before that at some point, maybe, but we definitely saw it.
Yeah, and we also caught up on Doctor Strange, and we just watched the trailer for Paper Girls, which we're excited about. It's an old under the comic covers coverage. They used to do Paper Girls, and it's coming out on Amazon Prime.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I never got into that, but I know people who read it and listened to Eric and Grace are excited about the show.
Oh, it's great. It's really good.
Next item, speaking of Steven Yeun, I found out just yesterday he's going to be joining Toni Collette, Robert Pattinson, Mark Ruffalo in Parasite director Bong Joon-ho's next movie, Mickey 7. That's kind of cool. A lot of good names there.
Yeah.
It's based on a novel by Edward Ashton, and the synopsis says, Mickey 7 is an expendable, a disposable employee on a human expedition sent to colonize the ice world Niflheim. Whenever there's a mission that's too dangerous, even suicidal, the crew turns to Mickey. After one iteration dies, a new body is regenerated with most of his memories intact. After six deaths, Mickey 7 understands the terms of his deal and why it was the only colonial position unfilled when he took it. That's a nice
cast of weirdos. Like, those are actors I like because they tend to do weird things, and that is cool.
Yeah. I think Robert Pattinson's the star. I don't know what role Steven Yeun has, but I hope it's a big one. And I loved Parasite, so I'm all in on this. Yeah. And last, way back in 1990, there was this adventure game called The Secret of Monkey Island, and it became one of the most renowned, you know, well-regarded point-and-click adventure games. Really funny. That's what it was most known for, but great characters and puzzles. It's like a pirate game. And some consider that game and the sequel to be some of the best computer games ever made, not just adventure. Well, it takes place in a fictional version of the Caribbean during the age of piracy. You play Guybrush Threepwood, this young man who dreams of becoming a pirate and explores fictional islands while solving puzzles. Have you guys ever played like those point and click adventure games? Story-based games.
I'm not proud of myself. Many occasions it devolved into me working my way across the screen on a grid pattern, trying to click on things.
Sure.
I'm bad at puzzles.
I think the more modern ones make it a little more apparent what's clickable. But it's puzzle solving. You have a goal and you click on objects and you try to put things in different things and stuff like that. But
I fell down the Leighton wormhole about 8 years ago, and it didn't end well, did it, Peter? We all got a bit fed up with Professor Leighton, didn't we? We were like
You know, Telltale's The Walking Dead is an evolution of those kinds of games for sure, and that's a good one. But in the 90s, LucasArts put out a bunch of great ones, and there was an Indiana Jones ones, and my favorite was called Day of the Tentacle. So the reason why I'm talking about this is because there were a bunch of Monkey Island sequels produced, but the last one was way back in 2009 and nothing since, until recently they announced a new game called Return to Monkey Island. And two of the original writers who worked on the first two, Ron Gilbert and Dave Grossman, are working on it. And there's a really fun trailer for it, and I'll put a link in the show notes. And I'm mentioning this because A, I'm a big fan of these adventure games, but B, one of the programmers of the original games, David Fox, is also working on this new one, and he's a longtime listener of The Walking Dead. He's a friend of mine of The Walking Dead cast. I mean, he's a friend of mine. So hi, David. And I'm excited for him that they're putting out another game, and just thought I would give it a mention. So Return to Monkey Island, coming out sometime this year. Keep your eyes out if you're interested in that kind of thing. I look forward to playing it.
What platforms will it be, Jason? Will it be PC or?
I don't know for sure, but I would guess it'll be PC and console. I mean, I shouldn't say this without knowing, but typically these days they tend to put it out on Xbox, PlayStation, PC, and sometimes Mac.
Brilliant.
All right, that is our show, episode 473. Thanks for listening, everybody. Thank you, Peter, for coming on. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's always a pleasure. It's a treat just to come along and talk about this show. I really enjoy it.
Good. I'm glad. I mean, I think you got a real sense of how stressed out I am about this trip, but I hope that didn't infect the whole podcast. I thought it was pretty fun.
It was good fun. I was surprised. I was like, what? You're stressed? You sound fine. Like,
oh,
yeah,
good. Okay.
Totally
good.
Fine. Totally fine.
For the sake of the listeners, I'm sure Jason will edit this out, but in all the gaps and silence, he's been making that throat singing.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, when I played that clip, that was actually me.
It's actually just him singing.
It's been really distracting, but you know, Lucy's a pro. She's yeah, soldiering on.
I put up with a lot that people just don't hear. They don't know what I go through. For example, right now it's very true. It's a freaking heat wave where we live. It's like 30 plus degrees, and I'm upstairs in like the hottest room in the house. Peter is downstairs in like the nice cold room. So I'm sweating like an absolute, like I've got a zombie bite. That is the level of which I'm sweating right now. So it's been a tense hour and a half for all of us.
And what's 30 in Fahrenheit?
Oh, I mean, it's probably like nothing to American listeners. It's 86.
Okay, there we go.
But in the UK, we average about 60. So we average about 60.
So it's about 25 degrees hotter than you're used to right now.
Yeah. I don't do well in heat. It's just a fact.
I don't really care for it that much either, to be honest.
No, it's too warm. It's too warm.
So as I mentioned, next up for Walking Dead Cast will be Nope, which will be in a couple of weeks before the end of the month sometime. And Karen will be joining us for that one. That's the plan. So we're excited about that. This episode is made possible by Patreon supporters like Jessica Miller, who pledged their support at patreon.com/JasonCabassi. So thank you, Jessica. One of the best perks I always like to mention is you get ad-free versions of each episode while you get to feel good about supporting the show and everything. So thanks, everybody.
Thanks, Jessica. Thanks, everyone.
All right. That is our show.
Thanks for listening.
Don't get bit, Corinne Boyle.